From the Land de Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the first day of fall 2021, and it's Fall Fun Drive. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, I'll ask you to dial this number, 217-244-9455, or go online at willgive.org, and to make a pledge of financial support to the programming that comes to you from Illinois Public Media, all about markets and weather. Speaking of which, we'll talk with Jim McCormick today. Jackie Vakes is out of the office. Jim is with agmarket.net. And we'll also hear from Michael Cordonier of Soybean and Corn Advisor. He's in Hinsdale, Illinois. Gary Schnitke will be here to talk about the price of farmland over time as an investment and returns from it. And of course, we'll take a look at the weather forecast too. That with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, all on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Dial that number, 217-244-9455, right now. It is public radio for the farming world, and you're the public in the radio.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, December corn for the day finished at $5.25.5. That was 8.5 higher. The March contract at 5.33.8 higher. And May futures for the corn at 5.37.5, up 7.5 cents. November beans, 12.82.75, 8.75 higher. The January at 12.91.75, up 9. And the March contract, 8 higher on its settlement at $12.95.25. Bean oil up a dime for the day. And rather, that was the bean meal up a dime for the day. The bean oil was $1.07 higher. Wheat futures in the December contract at 7.05.75 finished the soft red up 15.5, and the hard red December up 15.5 as well at 7.06 on the afternoon. Live cattle futures in Chicago 75 cents higher. Feeders up $1.27.5, and lean hogs down 22.5 cents. Jim McCormick now joins us to take a look at what happened in Chicago for this Wednesday trade. Jim, thank you for filling in this afternoon. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
It was an interesting day. There was some political function that played in the trade throughout the day. Tell me about what happened in Washington, D.C.
Well, for a third time, we had more rumors, because nothing is concrete, about adjusting the mandates for the renewable fuel standards. When this first came out the first time around, we had beans down over a dollar limit. Then the story kind of regurgitated itself again, and we were down hard again. This is the third time this story has come out, but this time, unlike last few times, the market sold off, but they shook it off, and we had a relatively strong close across the board. And I think the real thing, Todd, to take out of this is they are going to make some adjustments to the mandate, but the reality is this. They're making adjustments to the mandate from essentially the past 2 years, and that will have zero impact on the corn we use for ethanol consumption in the past 2 years. So it's really not going to affect the overall corn consumption. It's more of a RIN game than anything else.
How did corn react during the day?
So when the news came out, the corn market actually sold off, but then we came back. We ended up 8 cents higher. The bean market was trading higher before the story came out, and the tweet came out about the story, sold off the unchanged, and then it worked its way right back up again. So overall, I think you got to take as a very positive sign that you had some negative news, and the market was able to close stronger as harvest is really starting to progress across the Midwest.
Well, tell me about that part of it, because that does seem to indicate either demand is really strong or the market thinks that there are fewer bushels either of corn or soybeans out there, or both, I suppose.
I think it's what it is. I think on the bean side, we are seeing a lot of rumors of China buying demand. We saw a couple cancellations last week, and then they came back in. We heard 4 or 5 cargoes might have been purchased yesterday. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some more cargoes possibly purchased on today's little sell-off. So I think you're starting to see that demand from China, Todd. The reality is, you know, those cancellations last week were because, plain and simple, we couldn't get everything shipped out due to the Gulf being shut due to the hurricane. But China paid a huge premium to get those beans. So we know the demand is there. So that's a good sign for the beans. And I think on the corn side, the reality is there's a lot of concern that the crop's just not as big as what the USDA states. Now, right now, the current USDA estimate is 176.3. That's about 3/10 off the best crop we've ever had. And when the reality is you see the disease pressure that we're hearing, the tar spot pressure across the eastern part of the Midwest, it seems very hard to think we get that yield. The other thing our group is hearing a lot of people talk about is test weight. It's 2-3 points worse than it was a year ago. And the reality is it seems very, very hard to have record yields when you get a test weight issue out there.
Earlier in the week, there was an issue with some of the outside markets, particularly as it related to China. Has that abated for the moment?
That seems to have abated for the moment. There's two things China did. The first one, that group did make a debt payment, so that kind of took a little fear out of that they weren't going to make that interest payment. The other thing that went on in China was that the Chinese have injected a lot of money into their banking system. So that was kind of one relief valve that kind of took place, and that kind of supported the market today. The other thing that just came out this afternoon was the Fed. They chose to not raise interest rates anytime soon. They are going to kind of keep an eye on when they are going to start that taper, but the market took that in stride, and stock market's up 400 or 500 points on that news. So in essence, the market liked that news. So we've got two macro things that are hanging over the market that have come back positive for the overall situation. The last macro thing we've probably got to deal with, at least near term, is this debt ceiling, and will it not get lifted? My belief it will when it's all said and done, but it's a little bit more political negotiations to go on before that happens.
We should probably close with the grain stocks report. It's due out on Thursday of next week, so a week away. Anything that you've been watching?
I think what we're looking for is a friendly number on that, plain and simple, especially on the corn side of the situation, Todd. Our clients run from the essentially Colorado all the way to the East Coast, to Texas, all the way up to North Dakota. One thing I can tell you that everyone saw was an incredibly aggressive bid for corn, for the few bushels of corn that were left to be sold, or to entice that producer to bring that corn out of the field early, as much as $1.50. So when I look at the aggressive bid across the country, I think that what that's telling us is we do not have 1,187,000,000 bushels of corn technically left over at the end of the year. That's what the current number is. They're calculating that number now. They'll release it next week. And we think when it's all said and done, our group believes that carryout could be below 1 billion bushels on this corn side. So I think you got a potential very bullish report. I might mention the last three quarterly grain stock reports and acreage report numbers were all limit bids on the corn market when it was all said and done on report days.
Hey, we'll keep an eye on it. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you again for having me on.
That's Jim McCormick. He is with AgMarket.net. Have you dialed that number yet? 217-244-9455 with your pledge of financial support for the ag programming that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. I hope so. Thank you so much if you already have. If you've not, go ahead and dial right now, 217-244-9455, or go online at willgive.org. That's willgive.org and make your pledge of financial support. I kind of like that $120 level, but whatever you're able to give, we would appreciate the gift. Thank you so much for spending your time with us here. I love doing it. I don't want to call it work. It is, but I really like to be with you here every business day of the year and talking to folks like Jim McCormick and Drew Lerner, who you'll hear today, Gary Schnitke from the University of Illinois, on average about once a week, and then special guests like Nathan Klucheski yesterday talking about fungicides on corn and how to assess them in the field at this time of year after the fact, whether or not you've put one on. And then, of course, things like Dr. Cordonnier, who will be coming up in just a bit. If these things make a difference to you, if you listen because you want to hear the markets and the weather and about production agriculture and what the Farm Doc team has to say, thank you for doing that. But it does take a little money to make the world go around. And if you could spread some our way, that would be great. 217-244-9455 is the number to call. Make sure that you tell them that you're calling in support of ag, or if you're online at willgive.org, put that in the comments section. And thank you again for supporting us here at Illinois Public Media and the agricultural programming. Now, speaking of Illinois, Gary Schnitke from the Farm Doc team, agricultural economist here on the U of I campus, has written another article for the Farm Doc website. You can read it there at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. This time around, he looked at farmland and its value over time, kind of as an investment, and what the returns really are like. I thought you'd be interested in it, and, well, Interest is one of the things that Gary thought about as he was reviewing some of the numbers.
Yeah, farmland has been a very good investment over time. If you look at average returns from farmland and you take the period from 1970 through 2021, the average return has been 11%. So that's very, very, very good. Obviously, timing that purchase does matter. You don't want to purchase it, for example, in the 1980s when it was at its high and have it crash next year. But even then, if you held it out for 20 years or more, you would get a return approaching 10%. So returns to farmland have been overall pretty good.
Has the makeup of the 10 to 11% return changed over time?
Yeah, so if you look at the what makes up returns, there's two parts of it. The current return, which is for farmland cash rent, or the return from what farmers get in farming it, and then there's capital gain. And the capital gain is the change in the farmland price over time. And over time, the current return has been decreasing. It has averaged over the 1970 through 2021 period 5%, and now it's down to 3%. You can attribute a lot of that to the much lower interest rates overall, because if you look at the returns on an alternative investment, they're on a treasury note, they're well below 3%. So farmland returns also have fallen over time.
What role do real estate taxes play?
So, you know, land taxes for property taxes are, if you're owning the land and not farming it, they're the most significant cost. In Illinois in 2020, those averaged about $52 per acre. Those land property taxes tend to be lower in southern Illinois and higher in the middle and northern part of the states. But $52 per acre roughly equals about a half of a percent of the return to farmland. So, you know, when you look at cash rent, you have to subtract off the property tax and other costs to come up with the farmland return. So keeping those in mind are important.
How hard is it for those that are new or beginning farmers to purchase land?
Yeah, it's very hard, obviously. Part of that is because a lot of the return to farming is from capital gains, or the return that comes from owning the farmland. So if a beginning farmer wants to buy farmland, they have to come up with a down payment, which is generally pretty hard. And then if that down payment is not above 50% of that land price, the farmland or the returns to farmland won't cover the debt costs. So some other source of income has to follow the debt costs or cover the debt cost of financing that land. So that comes back sort of the old adage that farmers live poor and die rich. And part of the reason why that is because, you know, if you're buying land, you have to find other sources to finance that farmland.
What are your primary concerns after reviewing the numbers?
Well, so if you're looking at returns over time, I would expect those to average 10 to 11%, right? And history would say that. There have been times of farmland price declines. Predicting those is difficult. Some people have concern for that right now. Others don't. But that would be a concern. But you don't see anything changing the basic issue that farmland is a good asset, but it's very hard to finance.
Thanks, Gary.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnittke is an agricultural economist here on the University of Illinois campus. You may review his article on farmland returns at the FarmDoc Daily website. Michael Cordonier from Soybean and Corn Advisor now joins us from Hinsdale, Illinois, to discuss the beginning of the growing season in South America, Brazil, and Argentina. Thank you for being with us today. What have you been watching in those two nations?
Well, it's always glad to talk to you, Todd. They're just getting started to plant in Brazil and Argentina. And in Brazil, last week was the first week you could start planting soybeans. And it's less than a half of 1% that is planted. So there's a little bit planted in Mato Grosso, a little bit in Paraná. Now, the rainfall thus far has been okay in southern Brazil, but up in central Brazil, it's still pretty hot and dry. In fact, this week, temperature is supposed to be really hot, over 100 degrees in central Brazil, so the farmers aren't going to rush out and plant soybeans anytime soon. Now, they are planting their first crop of corn in southern Brazil. It's about a quarter planted now, and the rainfall has been okay in southern Brazil, and the germination seems to be okay as well. Now, in Argentina, they're just barely getting started on corn. Only maybe 2 or 3% of the corn is planted. Now, what everybody's concerned about is this forecast for La Nina. There's like an 80% chance in November, December, and that usually brings dry weather to southern Brazil and Argentina. So it's getting started okay for right now, but the concern is a couple months from now what the weather's going to be.
How big an acreage do you think Brazil would put in the ground this year, particularly of corn?
I think the full season corn will go up a couple percent. The Safrinha corn probably go up maybe 5%. So all combined, it's going to be, you know, 3, 4, or 5% increase in corn acreage. Now, the Safrinha corn is three quarters of the total. So that's going to depend on when the soybeans get planted and when the soybeans get harvested. But corn prices are really high, between $8 and $9 in Brazil. So farmers are opting for a more full season corn instead of soybeans in a few areas. So I expect for the Safrinha corn, they're going to swing for the fences, so to speak, and plant as much corn as possible.
Is it likely that that will be exported out of the country, or will it simply backfill what they're short?
It's going to backfill. They are very, very tight. And in fact, they're going to import a record amount of corn from Argentina and Paraguay. They were way, way short on corn because the Safrinha crop this past year was just a disaster, a complete disaster. So they exported last year, I think, 32 million tons of corn. This year, the estimate is maybe 17, 18 million tons will be exported. And there may not be much more than that exported next year. Now, it's going to be very tight supplies until at least next June, July, and August when they harvest the Safrinha crop. And if that crop is disappointing, then it's maybe a year and a half, 2 years before they can refill their corn stocks. So it's a very tight situation in Brazil for corn.
Here in the United States, have you been watching closely, and do you have some supply and demand figures you might share?
Well, we've been watching the production, of course. And I have the corn at 176 bushels per acre and soybeans 50.3, but I have a neutral to lower bias. I'm not quite as optimistic about the crops as I was a couple of weeks ago. I think the ending hasn't been very good. It's been hot and dry for the last couple of weeks. It is cooled off now, but still, the crops are, both crops are about 10% faster than average in maturity. And I don't think that's a good way to finish off the crop. And I think one state that might be a surprise is Illinois. There's apparently a lot of diseases. We had dryness in the northern part of the state, but a lot of tar spot and other foliar diseases. It really killed the crop prematurely, in some areas 3 weeks early. So I think the Illinois corn yield is going to be less than what was expected. And, you know, I have a little bit, probably a little bit of negative bias for the yields. I just don't think it's been a very good ending to the crops.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Anytime, no problem.
Michael Cordonnier is with Soybean and Corn Advisor. He is in Hinsdale, Illinois. Let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. It's a beautiful day here.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the weather forecast here for harvest. We've had some rain in the Midwest. Tell me about that and then what the next week or 10 days looks like.
Yeah, well, we're getting this storm system out of the way that we've been dealing with for a while. You know, that all that moisture from Tropical Depression Nicholas just hung on and on and on. And we finally got it to move northward, and it merged in with this frontal boundary this last couple of days. And we've had quite an enhancement of rainfall for the eastern Midwest. But that's history pretty much once we get to late tonight, and then we're dry for quite a while. We have a little frontal system that cuts through the Midwest this late weekend into maybe Monday. Well, it's mostly Sunday, I guess, and it's not going to produce a lot of precipitation, just a few showers briefly. It shouldn't set anybody back in any major way. And once that's gone, we go back into a few more days of drying. The midday model run today and a couple of models last night have been trying to suggest a rain event coming up somewhere out at the end of next week in hard red winter wheat country, which would be extremely important if it were to occur. It's really getting dry out there. You know, they had days on days of 90 and lower 100 degree heat earlier this month, and they had good moisture once upon a time, but they've lost a lot of that. And they need some more moisture with the bulk of planting coming up. Well, this system at the end of next week, if it verifies, would give an opportunity for some rain and some relief there so that they could go ahead and be a little more aggressive with getting seed in the ground. I wouldn't hold my breath on that, though. But next Wednesday, when we chat again, we can take a look at this one more time. And I'll be willing to bet that we've lost some of the rain potential by that time.
Well, today is the equinox. It marks the beginning of fall here in the northern hemisphere. And in an unusual manner, it feels like fall today.
Yes.
The arrival of fall has come. However, in the southern hemisphere, it's the arrival of spring. Can you tell me about the weather forecast there?
Yeah, the Argentina outlook is looking fairly dry now for a fair amount of the 10 days coming up. It's not absolutely dry, but what precipitation is going to be occurring is not going to be bolstering soil moisture very favorably for early season corn or sunseed planting. And winter wheat will probably hang in there in the areas that have had a lot of moisture recently, but there's some areas in the western part of Argentina that still need better amounts of moisture in the soil to stimulate some new season crop development. In Brazil, everyone's focused in on center west and center south crop areas. Typically, the pre-monsoonal showers and thunderstorms start kicking in the latter part of September and increase in October. Well, we are seeing some of the computer forecast models suggesting that starting this weekend and going into all of next week, we should start seeing some showers pop up. Now, it takes a while to prime the atmosphere with moisture. So the first set of showers are going to just evaporate away and not really produce much moisture. But when we get into the first week of October, I think we will start seeing a little better opportunity for showers and thunderstorms. And eventually we'll have some much improved planting potentials. I believe that Paraná already has 1% of its soybean in the ground. And I think Mato Grosso has put a few seeds in the ground, but they say they need a lot more moisture before they can go very far.
Hey, thank you.
Have a good day.
You too. That is Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.